My presentation is about using smartphone apps to schedule irrigation. And so I'm going to spend a few minutes today telling you about the way we developed the app in terms of the logic process behind it, and then I'll show you a few snapshots of the app to entice you perhaps when it becomes available in a couple of months to start using it, evaluating it for us. A lot of the information I'll be presenting today is also available on my website, so I have this up here sort of as a little advertisement for you to go and check out the information if you want. We will have a paper in the proceedings, but you can see the stuff already on the website if you're interested. This project is a large partnership, and the lead people for the project are at the University of Florida. Dr. Katie Migliazio and Dr. Kelly Morgan have both written major grant proposals that have gotten this funding for this work. Two of them have been USDA NIFA National Integrated Water Quality Grants, and one has been an RCS CIG grant. And then we have support from Cotton Incorporated and the Georgia Cotton Commission. This is the project's website. This is where you can go to download some of the apps that I'll be describing. We have four apps that are part of our suite of deliverables. There's one for citrus, one for turf, one for strawberries, and one for cotton. I have been responsible for developing the app for cotton, and my colleagues have been developing the apps for the other commodities. So the citrus, the urban lawn, and the strawberry apps are already available. They're free. You can go to the Google Store or to the Apple Store and download them for free and begin evaluating them. You can go to this website so you don't have to search on the Google Store or the app or the iPhone Store. You can go to smartirrigationapps.org, and it provides a direct link to where you can download the apps. So our goals here were pretty broad because you can see that a lot of people involved from several universities. But essentially, we want to provide something that's really practical and useful to the end user. And so the three bottom bullets there are the ones that are really most important for us, that we develop apps that require minimum user input so that they're user-friendly, so you don't have to spend, 20 minutes, 30 minutes parameterizing the thing. They're ready-to-use outputs, so information that's useful and easy to use, and that the apps are engaging and not static, so something that people want to go back and use multiple times, not something that's boring and difficult to use. There are three phases to the work we're doing, and that's primarily because we've got a number of grants that have been funded in series. So phase one was to develop the apps. That was the goal of the first grant. And they were staged because the logic behind some of these apps was already developed and sometimes available online on websites already. So it was a web program before it became a smartphone app. So for example, the citrus and the strawberry apps were already available. They had been developed at Florida. And the other two had to be developed from scratch. And then phase two, based on a second grant, was to evaluate and demonstrate these things, which is the phase that we're going to be in 2014. And then finally do full-scale field trials with the third grant that got funded. And that will be beginning this summer and going on for a couple of years. And we also want to add a peanut app into our suite of deliverables by the end of next year. So all of these apps are based on this operating principle of using reference evapotranspiration multiplying by a crop coefficient and coming up with an estimated crop evapotranspiration. So this is nothing new, nothing earth-shaking. Many irrigation scheduling tools use exactly the same technique. We decided to use FAO 56 ET just to be consistent with what a lot of people around the world are doing. So now I'm going to deviate from the larger project and start describing specifically the smartphone app for cotton, because that's what the presentation is about. So here you see a list of bullets that describe some of the key operating principles of the app. We're using a simplified water balance approach, which is a little bit risky because it requires that we have good data on precipitation. This is different from what the other apps are doing. The other apps are not using the water balance approach. They recognize the risk of using precipitation data at this point, but we wanted to go ahead and start working on it in this fashion with the hope that in the future we won't have to rely just on a limited number of weather station networks like I showed you in this slide. Right now, the app is working in Georgia and Florida and is relying on the data from the Georgia-Florida Weather Network, but we want to expand this to use National Weather Service 4-kilometer grid precipitation estimates. So then it'll be useful, you know, region-wide and nationwide. But that's certainly a limitation and a risk that we have taken with the app. One of the other driving principles is that we're using accumulated heat units or growing degree days to change the phenology of the plant. So instead of using days after planting, which many irrigation schedulers use, we are using the growing degree days because, you know, if you have a season like we had this year where we had a lot of cloud cover, the growing season gets extended and your days after planting becomes a little bit risky in terms of deciding, you know, when to change the crop coefficient. Our app does not recommend irrigation amounts. Okay, so what we're doing is we're calculating the root zone water deficit based on our water balance, and we're notifying the user of this deficit, both in terms of inches of deficit and percent deficit. And we're recommending that they irrigate when that deficit reaches 50% or exceeds 50%. And I know you can't really see the app very well because the quality of the projector is not very good. But you can see here the user would get a notification on their phone saying your deficit now has exceeded 50%. We recommend you irrigate. So that's the way we're making it user-friendly and interactive. They don't have to go to the app every day and check it. They get notifications when things require their attention. We're also providing them with an estimated crop evapotranspiration, a weekly amount, so that people who don't really want to use the root zone deficit approach to schedule irrigation can just kind of look and see how much water has been used by the crop and then decide what to do on that. The most difficult part of developing our app was deciding on the crop coefficient curve, and we looked at a number of different options. These are just a sample of things we've looked at. And then we settled on a curve that looks approximately like this, and we fit this curve to measurements we made in the field across many parts of southern Georgia during the 2012 and 2013 growing season. I don't have time to explain that today, but if you're interested in how we did that, it'll be in the proceedings paper. I do want to point out, though, that we have the maximum KC of 1.2, and we have an inflection point here at 0.4 and another one up here. A lot of the information we used to begin with was based on work that Dr. Ritchie, who's in the audience here, did with 555 in Tifton. So we're using a lot of his information about how many growing degree days are needed to transition from one phenological stage to the other. Some of the variables that that the model uses on a regular basis are listed here. The ones that are highlighted in red are the ones that the user would have to enter into the system when they first start using the app. So for example, you may not be able to see this either, but when you start using the app, you can go to the field or enter lat long to say this is where my field is, and then the app automatically identifies the nearest weather stations, and you can select which weather station you want to rely on for your precipitation and evapotranspiration data. So that's selected up here. Also, you have a choice of 7 soil types, so you can choose sand, sandy loam, and so on, so you don't have to give a specific soil name, so it's a little bit generic, and we use that to determine the soil water holding capacity from a lookup table that we have on the server. Rooting depth, this is the way we're using rooting depth. We start out with a minimum of 6 inches, and we cap it at 24 inches, and it increases at 0.3 inches per day. This is something that we've played with a little bit, but this is what we've settled on. If some of you have better ideas on what we should be doing, I'll be glad to hear that. We do have a request for the irrigation system type because we have an irrigation effectiveness factor that puts in. You don't have to enter the factor. You just tell us what kind of system. And then we ask for your default irrigation depth, so how much you apply every time you run your system normally, because this is what we're going to use to irrigate if you don't tell us how much you've irrigated. So when we exceed that threshold, we're going to automatically schedule an irrigation and then ask you if you irrigated or you didn't irrigate, and then you can remove that irrigation value. But if we don't do it, add an irrigation automatically, and you know, the soil water deficit goes crazy because the user may forget to add it in at the end. So we prompt them and say, we did this, yes or no, is this correct? Here's an example of the calculations in spreadsheet form. I'm not going to go through this, of course, and show you how each column is used, but basically showing you the important parameters. You see here is the crop coefficient, which changes based on growing degree days. This is the evapotranspiration, the Penman evapotranspiration that we're getting from the weather networks. We convert this into a five-day moving average to do some smoothing. We get the crop coefficient times the evapotranspiration. Here's our rooting depth. As it changes over time, you can see available soil water. And from that, we calculate, using precipitation and irrigation, the root zone deficit and the percent deficit. So we have been testing the app on a limited basis. These are some data from the Stripling Irrigation Research Park. Calvin Perry, who's in the audience here, managed this trial for us this summer. He was evaluating a number of different irrigation scheduling techniques for cotton, including the UGA Extension recommended checkbook method, our app here highlighted in red, the crop water stress index. This is something that Ed Barnes from Cotton Inc. has promoted, the USDA Irrigator Pro model, and then just a rain-fed plot. And you can see that our app did pretty well. Of course, the rain-fed did really well, too. So as you can see, it wasn't a great year for irrigation studies in southern Georgia in 2013. But we are quite pleased that our app performed pretty well, and you can see the water we used significantly lower than the checkbook method, and the yields were also quite good. So we're optimistic about that. Just to give you an idea of what the soil water balance looks like, comparing our app to the checkbook method, I've got a series of graphs here that show soil water tension measured with watermark sensors. These are two plots from our app, and you can see that we were trying to maintain the soil water tension below a threshold of 40 kilopascals of centibars. And so my personal opinion is that that's a really good threshold for cotton. This is what the checkbook method did, and you can see why it used a lot more water. It just kept the profile much, much wetter. So this is where the savings, of course, in water is, in the difference in the soil water tension here. I have a couple slides here just showing you the interface of the apps. I hope you can see this from the back. It's a little bit less focused than I would have hoped. But here's some of the information the user would be getting on one of the main screens. Here it shows that we've had rain. You can see the little rain cloud. And the difference, there's two shades of blue here. You may not be able to see it, but there's a darker blue that showed the original deficit and then how the deficit was reduced by the rain that received. And down here they have information about how much irrigation was applied and how much rain was applied. And then they can correct this information if they don't agree with it. So if this is from the weather station, which is 20 miles away, and they have a rain gauge in their field and they say this is not correct, they can adjust that. Likewise, when an irrigation event occurs, you can see it shows that irrigation happened. Here's the status of the deficit now. You can change the amount of irrigation if what the app put in is not correct. And here again is the notification that something has gone on. Here are a couple of screenshots that show you how the user can adjust this. Basically, here's the number that's in the system. You can plus or minus it up or down to adjust it any way you want. So you could do rooting depth, water deficit, irrigation applied, rain observed, and so on. The next steps for 2014 is that we're going to be testing this extensively. We hope that many of the county agents in Georgia will start using this, and just to work with some of their farmers and see if it has value and where the problems are, because I know there are going to be some problems. We'll have it in the stores by March 1st. We hope that's our deadline, so it will be available for the growing season. And then we have an effort working with Diane Rowland and Jose Payero at Clemson, Diane at Florida and Jose Payero at Clemson, to regionalize this app. So what we're envisioning is that there would be a series of KC curves built into the model, so that if you are in South Carolina and the app recognizes you're in South Carolina, it kicks in the South Carolina KC curve. And if you're in Florida, it kicks in the Florida curve, and so on. And that's the end of the presentation. So this is an interesting picture. I didn't take the picture here, but one of our colleagues who works on our projects took this picture. And when I started working in Georgia, people told me to worry about rattlesnakes and fire ants and gnats, but nobody said, watch out for alligators in the fields. So interesting. So we have time for one question, because I've almost used up all the time. Does anybody have a question for me? Craig. OK. Okay, good question. Craig's question is, if you're not in Georgia or Florida, where will we get data? So the long-term plan is to be able to use National Weather Service data. So we would go to the National Weather Service website and get the 4-kilometer grid precipitation data that they have. That's not built into the app yet, but we're evaluating that. When we expand to Alabama and South Carolina, we will be using their weather networks as a short-term solution. But we hope by 2015 we actually will have the National Weather Service grid built into it. Yes, you certainly can put in. I mean, you can go in there daily, and you know, we've built that feature, and so you can adjust the precipitation on your own every day if you want to. Not sure about that, Craig. I have to check into that. I'm not sure if you can adjust the reference ET. But that's a good point. Okay, one more question. Yes, sir.
Will this work on all smartphones?
Yes, it's built for Android and iOS platforms. So it'll work on any Android phones and any Apple phones. Beyond that, the Microsoft phones, we haven't approached that yet. Okay, so I'll be around, of course, since I'm a moderator, so you can ask me any questions. Next speaker, please.